Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men and talk about it. I can't believe I fucked it up this time.
I know. It's such a role reversal.
We're reversing roles. That's terrible. If you haven't noticed,
for you, it's terrible.
Yeah, no, I know.
What do you know from terrible?
Well, I'm usually the smart one. You're usually the big old dumbass.
Mm.
People know that's you. True. That's your brand.
It's true. It's my brand.
Big old idiot.
Oh, hi, I'm stupid. I'm Vince. I don't remember things. I'm too busy with my family. Shut up. Be smart. Read book. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, then you will notice that I sound like shit.
Don't dismiss us out of hand because of how stupid Matt sounds, because he gets better.
I once again, maybe for the 15th time, have lost my voice because my child gave me an illness. At this point, it's become a fucking meme. Like, people are commenting, like, Matt gets sick a lot. Let's do a Matt sickness counter, and it's you can add another tick to that fucking counter. But what can I do? I mean, listen.
I think it evens out about the time your kid turns 3. But before
that's what
then,
I hear.
It's like every 2 months you are sick.
And yes, just, yes. Yeah. I, like literally,
I mean, that's generous 2 months. More like month. Yeah.
If you do not have children, I can understand you being like, is Matt dying? Or like, why is he sick all the time? And the answer is, I mean, yes, we're all dying, but no, it's my kid's fault. I blame kids.
He has filthy little child, all germy.
Yucky, yucky baby. Thank you for listening to the world's only Mad Men podcast. Please comment, you know, like, subscribe. People have been mad at us, Vince, because we keep telling them to comment. So the last comment on the Apple podcast store, someone let it be known that they didn't like us saying it all the time. And here's comment.
Don't tell me what to do.
Oof. That Woo. Was, it was harsh. It was harsh. But you know what? I'm going to tell you
fair.
What to do. Yes. Please comment, like, subscribe, do all those things, and join the Patreon, patreon.com/ruckus. Okay. Today, we have a wonderful guest. This is a crossover episode. We have a guest who you may know from writing such hit books as The Myth of Normal. You may know him as a podcaster and the most moral co-host of the Bad Has Barra podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, please welcome to the show, Daniel Mate.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, dog?
Matt, it's quite bracing to hear that in terms of the division of labor. On this show, you're the smart one?
Yeah. That's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing. Like, that's why I started Bad Has Barra, because I was like, you know what? I'm tired of being so smart all the time. I want to play a dumbass and get a smart guy
for once
to be my co-host.
I'm going to get someone else to just talk about cum and doing freestyles.
Exactly. Well,
I'm happy for you. That's diversification. That's
it's great. Nice. I mean, I contain multitudes. You know, I like Mad Men and I like Palestine. You know, I feel like I am a cross-section of America that so rarely gets advertisements sold to it. You know what I mean?
Brand new demo.
Daniel, what is your favorite advertisement?
Probably the ads that stick out the most in my memory come from my youth as a Canadian boy in the early 1980s.
Sure, Canada ads.
And there is a product, a canned noodle product called Zoodles.
Zoodles.
Yeah.
This is a very specifically a Canadian product.
I think it's Canadian.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah,
do you
guys have
Alphagetti here and Zoodles? No,
it's Alphagetti.
Yeah, so noodles.
Is that like SpaghettiOs?
I was going to say, I think
it's like SpaghettiOs, but in Canada it was called Alphagetti.
Why?
That's so
it's the same language.
I don't know why that
it doesn't need to be different.
Same reason we call it a sofa, a Chesterfield.
That's so weird. I feel like Canada just does shit to be different.
Totally. And yet we have two countries we're trying to be different from, England and America.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet we're kind of secretly on both of their dicks.
Yeah. It's weird.
Because we don't have much of an identity of our own.
Like, do you guys say Zed instead of Z?
We do say Zed instead of Z.
What is wrong?
I've since given up the practice. Now that I live in the States, it's just, you know, and I we spell labor with a U and
Like the Zed with a Z, it ruins the ABC song.
I know.
You can't do it.
Unless you rename V Ved.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. If you change it to Ved, then it works.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that. This is America.
Yeah. The only person who does that is Eddie Vedder.
That's right.
He Veds all over the place.
That's right.
So there was a commercial for Zoodles, Libby's Zoodles. Libby's is the company. Mm-hmm. And there is a song that goes along with it. And it's just a bunch of kids, you know, eating their zoodles with spoons, you know, and like these like overcooked noodles in sweet tomato sauce kind of vibe. And they, you know, they have little animal shapes. Mm-hmm. And as the jingle is sung, I think some animated, very bad animation animals come to life. And if I remember correctly, the commercial goes like this. Say, have you ever gone hunting with a bowl and spoon? Now you can with Libby Zoodles. Elephants, lions, zebras, giraffes. Zoodles are animal noodles. So tell all your friends. Tell the whole bunch. And then there's a kid who says, I just ate a hippopotamus for lunch. Say, have you ever gone hunting with the bowl and spoon? Get hunting with Libby Zoodles. Any kid growing up in Canada in the 80s will be able to sing that by heart.
I like that there was like two rhymes in that entire song.
Yeah.
Like, there was almost no rhymes.
It was like free association. Yeah. It was like one of those like poems that you're like, it doesn't need to rhyme. It's about mm-hmm. what words aren't capitalized. That's you know, right. Whatever those poems are. What are those called? Yeah, sure.
Free verse.
I didn't get the pun until you started explaining it. So like zoo noodles.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
you know,
you're the kind of kid for whom
the commercials,
the very on the nose spelling it out. Well, zoodles are animal noodles.
Yeah. Well, in America,
was written.
That was we call them menagerie in the States.
Stupid ass. You know, they should make joodles.
Yeah.
You know, like Jewish noodles. Have you ever gone hunting for Jews with a spoon? I'm sorry. We're just having a good time. Daniel.
My great grandfather bequeathed me his Jew hunting spoon.
I ate a rabbi. I think I found the advertisement. Here it is.
Have you ever gone hunting with the bowl and spoon? Well, you can with Libby's Zoodles. Elephants, lions, zebras, giraffes. Zoodles are animal noodles. Come on, tell all your friends. Tell the whole bunch.
I just had a hippopotamus for lunch.
Oh, that does rhyme.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Hunting with the bowl and spoon. Get hunting with Libby's Zoodles. Hey, kids, now there's new zoodles in yummy chicken sauce. Zoo, 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 zoodles.
What I like about it, there's these those little safari hats on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, in case you weren't, you know, like fully cosplaying as someone who's murdering animals with your mouth. Now
that's right.
You can put the hat on.
Yeah. They should have come out with like rare game zoodles, like gazelles, ibexes,
dodos,
okapis, and platypi.
Daniel,
that's actually Libby's special edition rare zoodles.
Yeah,
where it's all cryptids and what's its.
Mm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Daniel, have you seen Mad Men before?
I have. Before you invited me or I invited myself on this podcast, I can't mm-hmm. remember which, quite frankly.
It was both at the same time.
I was already doing a soft rewatch, not intently, but like
just you know, to have it
putting
on.
Episodes on. In the background or just kind of making my way back through the series, but I've watched it. I've watched the whole thing at least once.
Nice. Who's your favorite guy? I'm sorry, Vince. Favorite? I'm just trying to like, I'm trying to do new shit. You know?
All right. I like it. Yeah.
probably my new guy, my favorite guy is Peggy Olson.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, guy is not a gender term. Everyone on the show is a guy.
I'm just really appreciating Elizabeth Moss's performance.
Yeah, Moss's she is
performance
great.
On this, you know, just the restraint, the reserve, how much she keeps to herself.
Right. Mm.
And then, you know, her relationship with Don is, I think, pretty interesting. And her, yeah, she's not always very likable, but she's always very compelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd say she would be one of my favorite characters. I think, yeah. A lot of the other characters.
You definitely don't know what she's going to do. Everyone else, like, you feel like you can put your finger on what their deal is. I feel like you spend a lot of this show being like, hey, what's Peggy's deal?
Yeah. Why does she like Pete so much? He sucks.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, her relationship with Pete. The way she doesn't let him walk all over her
right
for very long, but she doesn't, there's no big moment where she just completely tells him off either. There's, right. there's some kind of bond.
She lets him paw all over her. She likes that.
Yeah, that's you get true. The feeling like she doesn't let him walk all over her, but also would literally drop everything to marry him and have babies. That's what it feels like. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, she's just, I think they do a good job of giving at least one of the women characters, like, and probably more than that, but you know, the complexity and the complications of trying to survive in that environment and thrive, and what her ambition is, a really big thing that drives her. Mm-hmm.
I know, but and then like the like corny way that you would write that, because you know there's that scene where she's telling off the dude that she went on a date with. It's from Brooklyn, and she's like, yeah. you know, do you like living this fucking boring life, being a corn syrup chugging schlub or whatever? And yeah. so like that makes sense, but then like the typical way that you would write that character is like, you know, she would be more like Joan, where she's trying to bag right. like the richest most powerful guy in the office, and she's clearly like not doing that because there's like something else in there.
Yeah, and they're true to her class position too, so the yes. conflict between her and Joan, and but then the conflict between her and her mom and sister and stuff, and the stuff with the priest, and like her individuality, like no one else's expectations for her fit for her.
Yeah.
And she's just very, very true to herself, to the more or less limited degree that she's allowed to be, as the, you know, I think from less to more as the 60s roll on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, as the smart co-host, I also want to say she's also kind of fucking hot too.
She's definitely
a catch. Like she's kind of a babe. But this isn't a podcast about me ranking who are babes. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men, and we of course cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Woke up this morning. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chosen Mad Men. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, once again. Today we're going to be talking about from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 3, The Benefactor. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
I sure can. All hell breaks loose during the filming of a commercial when comic Jimmy Barrett turns his venom on the product sponsor's wife and they walk off the set. There's much finger-pointing back at the office, but it's left up to Don Draper, who was playing hooky at the time and should have been at the shoot, to patch things up. Harry Crane gets a look at Ken Cosgrove's paycheck and realizes that Ken makes 50% more than he does. He decides to take action and suggests that one of their customer sponsors suggests that one of their customers sponsor a TV episode with a particularly shocking topic. Betty Draper finds herself rejecting the advances of the young man she had been admiring at the writing's tables.
I feel like you wrote this down. Did you write that one down?
No, that was off top. That was off
top. That's incredible. Yeah. You've got a great memory. But
I'm an idiot savant like that. That's my contribution to being the dumb guy.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say is, you know, we can't evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context, and we got to put some of that cultural context back in with a little thing that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's right. We're going all the way back to August 10th, 1962. That is the date. Well, you know how the segment works at this point.
Yeah.
It's a date that we're going back to. Don't fucking ask any more questions about that. There's a lot going on. There's this guy. Here's an article from the Philadelphia Inquirer. The Three Nation Wrangle over Soblin. I don't know if you guys remember Dr. Robert A. Soblin.
I do not. What did he do?
Convicted of spying for the Soviets. He then tried to flee to Israel.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. Back then, they were like, nah. Nowadays, they'd be like, sure. Yeah. Who did you sexually assault?
Yeah. Especially if the people he spied on were 9 years old.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Brett like Ratner's at the end of Godfather 2, Hyman Roth tries to live out the rest of his life in Israel, and they won't let him in. And I'm like, dude, you should have just waited a few years.
Isn't there some line where he's like, as a Jew? Like, yes. I want to exercise my rights as a Jew.
The right of return. Yeah, he tried to exercise his right of return. Didn't work out for him. He actually, he supposedly had leukemia at the time.
So did Hyman Roth.
Yeah.
He'd been dying from the same heart attack for the last 20 years. So I really like Godfather 2.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah, people don't know, but it's one of the best movies.
Really? I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, Google it.
Mm-hmm. He sought asylum first in Israel, then in Britain, committed suicide by overdosing on barbiturates when his last appeal for asylum in Britain was denied.
He tried to do a right of return to Britain?
Yeah, I don't know what his deal was there. I don't think we were there yet on August 10th. That was just...
If he's fleeing... Why doesn't he just flee to the Soviet Union if he's accused of spying for it?
I'm not sure. I think he was already in custody at this point, or like he was out on bail, and so he might have had trouble.
Right, you can't just go to a travel agent.
Dude, what's the point of spying for the Soviet Union if it's not to afford that American lifestyle?
That's a good point. Yeah, he'd be like, I'd rather die than live in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it's the American way.
That's right.
For a foreign enemy.
Yeah,
that's right.
Better dead than red.
Mm-hmm. Inquest may be held in Maryland case. Actress's will to be filed in New York by next week. More than one drug may have figured in the death of Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn's dead by this point.
Yeah, they cover this on a was it on a previous episode or
it's no? It's on a later episode. She's still alive, at least halfway through the season. She must have died a few episodes after.
Yeah. An overdose of Nembutal, a sleeping potion, was suspected when the blonde film star was found dead in bed at her Brentwood home Sunday. The coroner said that an empty bottle, which had contained 50 Nembutal tablets prescribed for Miss Monroe last Friday, was found on her nightstand. But toxicological researchers are interested in at least a dozen other prescription bottles also found there.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah,
It's weird, too, because like... Is there any theory out there that's like Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy because he was in love with Marilyn Monroe and was avenging her death?
I haven't heard that one, but...
I would like to trademark it.
Yeah, start that one.
I'd like to trademark it because that's a pretty good theory.
Mm.
Daniel, who do you think killed Kennedy?
Grassy Knoll.
George H.W. Bush probably, but
CIA. It was the CIA.
But when it comes to Marilyn, I mean, it seems to me that she lived her life like a candle in the wind, you know?
Yo.
I've never heard it put so poetically, but like, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Better to burn out than to fade out. Kurt Cobain.
You have to workshop that one.
Shut up.
Actually, like the wordplay, something about the
shut
wordplay.
Up. Shut the fuck up.
Then it's fade away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Shut up.
Okay. Yeah. Other headlines. Massachusetts Maritime has banned hazing. I don't want to read that story, but that was a fun one. And this one, beauties of 53 nations arrive in Long Beach. Oh, 53 shit. Select young women from 53 nations met each other and the press Thursday at Long Beach
select
Municipal
Select young
Airport.
Women.
Yeah.
There's a phrase you're not going to hear anymore.
Yeah. So these are emails. Premium choice select cuts of woman.
In a
fresh red meat for you to savor their juices.
In a preliminary to the 1962 International Beauty Congress. They came from
Congress.
Such far flung places.
Wait, it's not a it's not a competition, it's a Congress.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're getting together.
Congress shall pass no law abridging my right to
a wooga. The meeting has started. Oh, wow.
All rise.
They came from such far flung places as Finland and Singapore, Iceland and Morocco, Belgium and the Philippines, bearing such names as Tanya, Danielle, Olga, Sonia, Rita, Sheila, Mona, and just plain Jane.
Some, yeah.
He almost wrote Mambo number five there.
Roger Sterling's new wife is in there? Oh, of course, that's for later too, isn't it? Yeah.
I love that it's like such names as, and literally I'm like, those are all very recognizable names. I was waiting for like something exotic sounding. Yeah. Tanya?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of this? Girls are going out there naming their children Tanya.
There was Miss Kaoru Iwasaki of Japan in a brilliant kimono with a purple paper parasol. Miss Sue Burgess of England.
Picked a pack of purple parasols. I'm sorry.
Dressed like an Elizabethan damsel. Miss Maria Victoria Bueno of Argentina in a red and purple poncho.
Bueno.
For the sake of the ceremony, 21 of the girls were flown over from Los Angeles International Airport in a Trans World Airlines jet. The others were waiting for them here. Before the plane arrived, brunettes held the commanding lead in numbers, with the delegates from several Latin countries and the Far East on the ground. But when the plane door opened, out poured a storm of blondes from Northern Europe and Scandinavia, and even Maria Teresa Vianello, a 5'6" Roman beauty, turned out to be blonde.
Ooh, damn.
A blonde Italian?
Yeah.
Well, I never.
Nah, what'll they think of next? A blonde Chinese? I'm sorry. So that's what was going on at the time.
Yeah, that's it.
That this episode came out. Today, the Draper D story. I just have a few lyrics, and as soon as my voice, here's the thing about pre-recording all these things. By the time you hear it, you will hear a perfectly good rendition of this song. But for now, I'm going to read some lyrics, and you do your best to see if you get it. Should have known it from the very start. Jimmy teased my wife for being large. Now people listen what I'm telling you. I keep away from the funny mean Jew. I said, hey, hey. It's Run Around Sue, but it's funny mean Jew.
You can remember when they did that other song that sounds just like Run Around Sue, but isn't as good.
There's another Run Around Sue.
Yeah, they have like a fake version of Run Around Sue, but it's
this
a different
must be
song.
From the late 90s because I don't
it's
recognize
just not
it.
Good.
Well, you sing it.
I don't remember. I remember it just being like Run Around Sue.
Was it the same band? Because this was a thing in the 60s. Bands like
the 60s.
Chubby Checker did like 8 versions of The Twist.
It was like that. It wasn't like a different version of the same song. It was just like a different song that was clearly meant to be like, hey, that other one was.
Yeah. Hey, remember the first one? That? Well,
yeah.
How about another one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. Like, I think Chubby Checker had like a monster twist, you know? It was like, this is a Halloween twist. Here's a Christmas twist.
This is the Labor Day twist.
Yeah. This is an International Women's Day twist. We're just going to keep twisting no matter what the holiday. That's what he sounds like.
We got a twist that's just was made specifically to be played at pancake restaurants. Yeah. That's an untapped market.
Welcome to your bar twitzva. It's twistva.
Twistva.
That's what I said. Yeah.
You said twits. Whatever. It's fine.
Did I fuck it up?
Yeah.
Pointing it out. Okay. Let's get into this episode because you know what? It's a great episode and we got to talk about it. That's the point of the podcast. Vince, general thoughts on episode 3 of season 2.
Yeah. I mean, this episode was really, it's about how all autistic comedians are secretly cucked by loose women and how when you are fingering a woman who's not your wife, once you get home, it's so hard to get that smell off of your hand and you'll do everything that you can. It's sort of like a play on the Telltale Heart when you think about it only with
absolutely
fingering. I do wonder if this episode inspired the whole grab them by the pussy thing with Trump. But
had the same thought.
Yeah.
I mean, in a non-joke way, this was a really good episode where it had like, it was a self-contained, furthering all of the themes of Mad Men and just like memorable in, also like a memorable one-off. Like, I don't think Jimmy Barrett comes up again.
He does actually.
Oh, he does? Okay.
Because Don, this is the start of a several episode arc with Don and Bobby Barrett.
Having a relationship, yeah.
A relationship that lands him in some real some trouble, car accident a few episodes from now.
That's right.
And then Jimmy has some choice words for him and Betty several episodes later, which actually has a lasting effect on the trust between them. So
I mean, anytime you can get Patrick Fischler involved, it's good. It's a good thing.
So who is this guy? I'd never seen this actor.
That's a great question because he's just one of those guys that comes up periodically. I know he works with David Lynch, like he's in a few David Lynch movies.
Yeah,
I feel like he should be in Coen Brothers movies.
Yeah,
He was in Boardwalk Empire playing, what's the name of that old timey blackface guy?
Al Jolson.
Al Jolson. Yeah. He played Al Jolson. I believe he played Al Jolson in Boardwalk Empire. He's one of those character actors who's like been around, and he's wonderful in everything he does. And he kind of works as being this kind of like, I don't know,
miserable funny man,
like a mean roast comic from an era. He's got that period piece face that works really well, and in this episode he really shines. Daniel, what did you think of this episode?
I really enjoyed it. My favorite moment is probably Salvatore Romano with the most homosexual pencil sharpening move of all time.
angrily sharpening his pencil when he finds out how much Kenny Cosgrove makes.
Yeah, just the bitchiest pressing down of the pencil into the pencil shard. It's very funny. I enjoyed the episode thoroughly. I have a kind of fatigue reflex when it comes to Don Draper's conquests, and every time we meet a new woman that is or will be another member of his harem, I'd sort of just roll my eyes because I don't expect any of them to be particularly interesting, nor do I find his attraction to them to be interesting.
Right.
It just, that's one of the things about this show that tires me out is just, it's just constant, but he's addict. He's a dog. Yeah. And it's one of the ways he copes with his inner emptiness. And, and Bobby Barrett, he doesn't go all the way with her in this episode. He just does, as Vince said, grab her by
the pussy.
Does he go all the way? Like they cut away from the car scene. So that one's like left up to our imagination. What happened?
You're right.
There.
You're right.
But he does wash his hands, which seems to imply, I don't know.
Well, he very lightly rubs his fingers on her skirt after that moment.
Yeah. which is
he's just wiping away some schmutz.
I mean, pure just lady alpha move. I mean, that's why I like this show.
This one,
this show is about an alpha dog being an alpha dog. I was going to
say, this conquest in particular, like, the show seems particularly sympathetic to Don with this one, because it like starts with him being like, oh no, I couldn't possibly, I'm stuffed, no thank. And then she strong arms him into it a little bit, and then later it's like, oh well, she was just being a big old bitch, but then he
asserted his dominance in there by doing sexual assault.
He shoved a digit in there dry, which I don't know, is that some kind of move? Is that I've never seen that. I don't know what that whole scene was. It was interesting.
I think the idea with this character is that she's never dry. I mean, she's
that is the implication. Yeah, and it's, you know, it has that thing where you're watching it and the way it's shot, you're just like, oh, is this hot or a crime?
Right.
And you're like, what makes it sexy is the nebulous nature. And you're like, well, no, but on paper, that's a crime. She could charge him with a crime, but it works.
But then the danger of that.
Yeah, the dangerous part of the sexiness. Yeah, I love
too dangerous for me.
That's right.
The whole thing wouldn't have happened if Freddie Rumson wasn't such a sloppy drunk.
I know. He really is at fault.
Falls asleep at the switch in that opening scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the implication that, oh, well, Jimmy Barrett was drunk because he was hanging out with Freddie.
Right.
Freddie Rumson, you know? Yeah.
As if Jimmy Barrett wouldn't still sober see a fat lady and start riffing. Like, you know he's that way either way. But let's get into it. Speaking of that opening, it's an Utz chip ad.
Is this the first? I mean, I think feel like
I've
this
got
is,
some kettle chips with me.
Ooh, oh, yummy.
There you go.
For the occasion.
Beautiful.
It's actually, I didn't realize that that was how techno started. Utz.
Yeah. This is why I'm the smart one.
Yeah. No, I think this is one of the few, we haven't seen a lot of ads like being shot on this show up until this
That's
point.
True.
There
That's
was like
true.
The, I think there was the failed Betty Draper ad, but this one, like we get the
There was
whole,
a radio ad at one point last season.
That's right. The
but
audition,
this is the first,
least, yeah.
I think this is the first like television commercial we're seeing.
And this
shot.
Is also the episode where Harry Crane, which we'll talk about, basically pitches Roger Sterling on the idea of a television department. And I've always been unclear on what the different departments of Sterling Cooper
right.
do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I thought of television department, that makes me think we should be shooting television commercials, but that's not what the television department is. They're already shooting radio and television commercials previously. The television department is about interfacing with television programming
right.
and making sure that their sponsors are happy with where their ads are being placed.
Yes.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. Okay. And like, you know, I think at this time in television history, shows were, I mean, I think it's still the same in terms of shows are sold to advertisers at like these giant conferences called like upfronts. And I think this was like proto that. It was like people sharing a pilot around and going like, you know, can we get a sponsor for this? Because if so, then maybe we can make a few episodes of it.
Right.
So, you know, Harry...
I'll tell you, Don really took Bobby Barrett to the upfronts, am I right?
Hey!
You
know? He assaulted him right up in front of that... All right. So Jimmy Barrett is drinking. Freddie is asleep. Uh-oh.
I mean, he's so good
Bill
at
Murray's
this.
Brother.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like Fischler's so good at this character because it's like he just has that quality of being on autopilot where it's like he's there, but he's not there.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's doing the thing that I think, you know, a lot of comics do when they get hired for something, which is walk around like all of these people are here for me. Now he is playing a famous person, but even if he wasn't, you would be shocked by how many comics, if they book a thing, as soon as they get on a set, they're just like, where's my makeup and my trailer?
Was that like,
all right, everybody, this is a team effort. If we work together as a team, I'll be funny and you'll look good.
Right, exactly. And he's like telling people, like,
can somebody get this yogurt off the desk? Because if the yogurt drips off my mustache, it's not funny if it's already, there's already yogurt.
Yeah, if there's already yogurt on my mouth, someone wipe my mouth for me. So he's directing the directors and the cameras and saying, yeah, do this and that. He does a take of his, you know, Utz, better Utz than nuts or whatever the fuck commercial. Yeah. And then, what are they? The Shillings, husband and wife who own the Utz company, walk in to set to see a famous comic, Jimmy Barrett, doing the commercial. And, Jimmy, immediately goes into, insult comic mode. And, I have a clip.
Here we are in Lakers, New Jersey, watching as the great airship Hindenburg attempts to tie off its mooring mass, and, oh my God, she suddenly burst into flames. Oh God, look at the size of it. It's horrible. Oh, the humanity. Hey, get Sitting Bull on the phone. We found the last buffalo.
So as this is happening, watching, like, her face as she slowly realizes what is happening, like she doesn't at first know she's being made fun of. It is like, it's kind of like heartbreaking, but
yeah, she's a very sweet character.
Yes. But it just keeps getting funnier because he will not stop. You expect him to stop when people aren't laughing and he just keeps trying new angles.
Hey, get a wider lens, right? We want to shoot her in cinema fat.
Hey, Jimmy, what do you say we take a little break?
Open your mouth, sweetheart. I want to see if Geppetto's building a fire in there.
Fuck. That man is an animal.
Listen, he did all of that
Jesus,
clean.
Jimmy.
I know.
Just for your information, this guy's laughing over here.
Classic. It's my favorite comic move. Like, hey, what? This side's laughing. Yeah. What's wrong with you guys
this
over here on the right?
A bunch of fucking woke social justice warriors. People in the back of the room, they like the fat jokes.
So yeah, that kind of starts off this entire storyline.
My initial read on this was that he was annoyed that, like, other people that they had brought other people in the room to watch him. Like, he was,
you think Jimmy was annoyed?
At first I did, but then as it went on, I was like, oh no,
he's drunk and he saw a fat lady.
Yeah.
It's yeah. He's a simple man.
The thing with this show and drunkenness, mm-hmm. it's a weird thing where the verisimilitude doesn't always work for me. Like, this is a show where these guys are drinking all the time, so are presumably drunk all the time.
Right.
Then there's guys like Freddie Rumsen who can't hold their liquor, so they seem drunk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't often track, like, I don't get the difference between Don Draper sober and Don Draper after two drinks, because they'll sometimes cut to him where they're clearly meant to read as drunk, and I don't know how many drinks that is.
Right.
And so Jimmy Barrett here, like, didn't seem drunk to me.
Plus,
right.
He's
but
clearly,
that's the explanation. And I get it's normalized behavior for them, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and they've clearly sketched him as like a functional alcoholic, because he gets to that dinner and he's like already, you know, he's drinking two whiskeys or whatever. I forget what he ordered, but Jack Daniels, I think it was. But yeah, it's like, I think they're sort of, they're implying that he's just always drunk and always has impulse control issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think it's a little bit of like, I think it's a reason to blame, Freddie for this a little bit. It's kind of like in the pecking order, they want to blame Freddie for being, for like,
it's gotta be someone's fault that you hired a comedian being a comedian.
Right, exactly. You know, eventually it leads
more like a comedian if you
because he's mean. Yeah. Bar twist.
Have you seen comedians go ham on civilians like that, not while not on stage?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's not that often. Usually if there's like a comic just being mean to somebody, everyone feels super awkward about it, because it's like, why is this happening? Why are you doing it?
There's a general
like antisocial nature to a lot of comics. They're more likely to like, you know, wait till someone walks away and then say the meanest thing you've ever heard. You know, but in this case, he was like trying to impress everybody. And so it made sense in context. Like, I wouldn't put it past.
I've seen Jerry Seinfeld do it, but usually that's not to individuals. It's to an entire people, the Palestinians.
Oh, that's right. He'll just
randomly bust out with some kind of cruel.
Yes.
Well, Joe, I remember Joe talking about being outside the Comedy Store with Rogan when Rogan was wearing like
Joe Sinclitico.
Joe Sinclitico. When Rogan was wearing like an Eazy-E shirt, mm-hmm. and someone was like, you know, there's a thing that aspiring comedians or like comedian groupies do where they like try to neg comedians or something because they feel like they're in on the joke kind of thing.
Yes.
And so some guy came up and was like, hey Joe, do you know Eazy-E died of AIDS? And like barely, the words were barely out of his mouth when Rogan was like, yeah, he got it from your mom or something like that, where it was like, and Rogan already has that like quality where he seems aggro even when he's like trying to do like bits in comedy, and like that strikes me as like a very representative example like how that goes down usually.
I think a lot,
it's like someone heckles and then the comedian is so mean in putting down the heckler that it's like over the top and you end up feeling bad for the heckler.
Oh, 100%. Saw Al Madrigal did that to a heckler once. And it wasn't really a heckler. It was just someone who went woo too loud. And I was just like, this is kind of weird. I think that like most comics are like almost entirely constructed of defense mechanisms. So it's like, you know, that they're a lot are ready with one loaded in the chamber. But in this case,
and just used to people saying stupid shit too. Like,
sure.
I mean, there is a level of like, yes, you know, you're probably hearing more stupid shit than
the average person. Right. Yeah.
So I think this scene would have worked for me slightly better if there had been some provocation. Not that there would have been any real provocation, but if she'd laughed at the wrong moment.
Yeah, or
if
that's true.
If
I think, yeah, I think you're trying to put the explanation that I was trying to put like in, like I was trying to insert that somehow too in my head. Like,
yeah. Later on, Don is at a French movie. I'm not really sure what that was about.
Yeah, I didn't look up what this movie... Actually, that's a good question.
But he's doing that instead of being at work. And so
he's not with a woman, interestingly.
Yeah, no, he just went alone.
He's not with his East Village squeeze, or his, you know, his Greenwich Village squeeze, who I don't even think appears in this season.
Right, I feel like he let that one go. I'm not really sure what happened with that extramarital affair. He goes to a French movie. Later, he's back in his office. Kenny comes in and says, what happened with Jimmy? And basically, everyone goes into Don's office begging for help. Don is trying to see like who actually has control of this. And at the end of the day, he is almost blamed for it because he wasn't there, which I thought was an interesting little wrinkle.
He also wasn't reachable.
Right. He wasn't reachable. And his secretary, Lois, who has been, you know, become one of my favorite characters on the show.
It's great comic performance.
Yeah. She's so funny. And she's
I didn't remember that she was one of the switchboard girls until like this episode.
She was in love with Salvatore.
Yeah. She was the one.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, the trivia for that movie, in case you're curious.
Oh, I hope IMDb says it was Who Cares, 1962. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it isn't very...
No, popular. Say it.
Destiné, a.k.a. Daughters of Destiny.
Ugh.
It's about Joan of Arc or some shit.
Who care? I mean...
It's about Mr. Borelli.
Yeah, that's about Destiny, the streamer. It's about sex Destiny. He finds out that like he's the one who's got to clean this up, but first things first, he has to Kenny says this line,
you know, my mother's heavy set,
which which is...
I've heard Matt say that so many times.
Fuck you. I was wondering why you wanted me to cut that. You're like, can you clip that for me?
You couldn't figure out why I did.
I was on autopilot. God damn it. You made me do labor to do a mom is fat joke, you son of a bitch.
Here's Matt responding Apple Podcast reviews. Oh, you know my mother's having sex.
Oh, man. So before he fixes the stuff with Jimmy.
Sorry, I'm interrupting. But
yeah.
Okay. So one of the questions I have about this show is that like the their level of I don't know what to call it, denial about like what the secretary is supposed to do. Like she is sort of baffled about what she's supposed to do, and I am sort of baffled about what she's supposed to do.
I'm 100% with her. Yes. So this is the scene in which she gets.
You're supposed to cover for him, but you're not supposed to say that you're covering for him.
Well, you can't. You can't that frame it that way.
Yeah. That's right.
It's like everything about
it. You have to be utterly sympathetic. You have to assume that everything he does, he needs to do, and you're completely on board with. And so, like Joan, you have to be the best buddy, and like think you have to get out ahead of everything.
Yes,
and anticipate the PR needs of your master.
Yeah.
I get that in the abstract, but in like the, you know, in the moment, like what is she supposed to say in that moment?
Well, she's also supposed to not, I think there's something also about her demeanor because she reveals with her face and her, that's not that she's chiding him, but he feels chided.
Right.
She's not judged. Chill.
Yeah.
She's not one of the cool girls.
Yeah, she's not one of the cool girls.
Who's
yes.
chill to hang out with. He wants an experience of a woman who's completely subservient to him without fawning on him too much. That's not his style, but who also doesn't make him aware of any of the extra work she has to do.
Right. Anyone who would frame it as covering for you is not someone he wants to work with. Because just that frame alone is
when you
almost
come
accusatory.
Into it, accusatory. Yeah. You can't let the mob see your heels. So if you frame it apologetically, like they already know, they're already suspecting that something he's doing something wrong. And that's, and that's betrayed by your entire demeanor.
Yeah. And she's like, you know, I feel like the whole thing is very, like there's a gentleman's agreement. Like, you know what this job is about, wink, wink, and nobody says what this job is. And so if you're an alien, like Lois is, or like we are coming from, you know, decades later, I'm with Lois because I'm like, I don't know what to do, dog. Like,
tell me,
what do you want from me? Just if you just say lie, then we'd never have to speak of it again. Just say lie for me always, and then period, we're done. But if you never say that's what you want, then how am I to know that? Anyways, here's that scene. I think it's so funny.
I'd like to find a way not to be cruel, but I don't think it'd be serving either one of us.
Are you firing me?
Oh, no. It's nice to see you care about something.
That oh, no, is like comically one of the funniest fucking... That's the best delivery of oh, no.
Are you firing me? Oh, no.
It's nice to see that you care about something.
What a cruel response, too. It's nice to see you care about something. It's nice to see that you care about losing your job for reasons that aren't clear to you.
Right.
That sounds like me asking my wife if she's mad at me. Yeah. Are you mad at me? Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's happening, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, not again.
Aw. Old guilt was
very
get
Milhouse.
The dog bed out.
Yeah. It's got a Milhouse quality to it.
Yeah.
It's very sad. She's a real sad sack.
Yeah.
Trying to think of what you can possibly say to make up for what's happened here.
What happened?
See, she's not allowed to ask that.
Nope.
Yeah, you're supposed to just know.
I think you're not suited for this job.
What did I do?
In addition to being incompetent, you threatened my reputation, and not just today.
Mr. Draper, I try to cover for you all the time.
You do not cover for me. You manage people's expectations.
Can you be more specific?
You really want that?
No, I guess not.
That's my favorite line.
Yeah.
She is brilliant, and it's so good. The good thing is they don't actually fire her. She just is moved back to the switchboard. So
yeah.
Lois is still around.
So much about this show, and I know we're not supposed to envy them because like they're all terrible people, but just to live in a time
where you could yell at a woman.
No, not
I'm
when
sorry.
You
what were you
going to
say?
Woman,
what were you going to say?
But when you could get fired for incompetence, but not actually fired, like you weren't on the street when you got fired, you just got moved to a different department and probably made like the same amount of money. And then like you could be like, I haven't had like a real lunch. Yeah. I don't even fucking know how long, let alone like he's watching movies during the day. Like, I don't know. I just feel like we are in a environment of so much more precarity than any of these characters.
Well, if you think about it, we're at work right now.
Yeah, we are. This is hard work talking to you.
Okay, I'm gonna fire myself as the smart guy on the podcast, and I'm gonna bump myself down to dumb guy.
Oh, okay.
And I'm giving you a promotion. Mm. You're gonna be smart guy for the rest of
I'm heading up the Department of Television.
Yes.
And my first act is we're going to talk about Mad Men
this podcast. I love it.
Is that?
That's why.
Is a television show.
That's why you get paid the same bucks.
Wait, we're making the same on this?
Yeah, we're going to make the same.
Oof, I'm going to talk to my agent.
I feel like, Brent, that's probably a good cut for commercial. There we go.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. We should take a break for some ads.
All right. Well, you twist my arm. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to take a quick break to listen to some ads. But please stick around. We'll be right back. And we're back. It's Mad Yourself a Man. We're here with Daniel Mate. How you doing, Daniel?
You came back. I was in the middle of crunching a really... crunchy kettle chip.
That's fine. It's
was
good.
It Utz?
Is it a nuts? Exactly.
Utz are better than nuts.
Utz are better than nuts. Take it from,
Take
the
it
nut.
From a nut.
That's right. So Lois gets fired. Don meets with Jimmy's wife/manager, Bobby, and he explains that Jimmy is in trouble for being drunk and mean to the fat lady.
I love how that scene starts with the silhouette.
Oh yeah.
It looks like a commercial.
Yeah.
Or something out of a film, like with the two of them sitting there being like, come here often or whatever.
Yeah,
you don't even,
like a
you
noir.
You don't know quite who it is.
Yeah.
It does have a real noir quality to it.
And he tries to like give her the facts of life about what the work relationship is. And he basically says, you guys are, you must be loyal to your piggies. You know, your piggies are your patrons, like the Medici's of Florence. She kind of like pokes fun at him for the fact that he would have such large patrons.
And this is another moment where like it really contrasts with the precarity of modern times. Like it's hard to imagine a 2025 comedian not immediately like toadying to their corporate benefit. I mean, fucking Jack Black threw Kyle under the bus
immediately
in a heartbeat. It's like his best friend. But yeah, he's like, oh, please don't take away Kung Fu Panda 5.
Yeah. The fifth one's going to get me enough money to live for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It is kind of, the relationship is adversarial for what feels like no reason, especially since Jimmy was actually in the wrong. Like he fucked up. I think she knows that, but Bobby is,
she's the good version of Lois. Like she is what Lois should have been doing, which is like, no, we don't, we apologize only as like a last resort. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to let you smell fear.
She's managing Don's expectations about Jimmy.
That's right. 100%. And, she's doing what I think a good manager does, which is advocate for your client. And, you know, if the client's in some precarious position, still trying to squeeze a little bit more money out of it. She explains to him that the best way to get in good with Jimmy is make him think that he has a shot with your wife. And then they immediately go to, what is it, Don's car and start making out. And yeah. I'm not sure who seduced who in this scenario, but you know, it was hot. I liked it. It was cool.
I mean, she started it.
I mean, I guess
she's a hungry cougar.
I said that while me and my wife were watching the show together, which
how did she take that?
Not well.
You gotta stop saying things to your wife. you gotta learn.
Hey, I'm joking here. I do a comedy podcast.
Am I in trouble? Oh no. Yeah. Can you explain what I did wrong?
You sure you want me to do that?
I guess not. So Don comes home and gets his watch is fixed. Betty gives him his fixed watch and it's monogrammed. And I'm not sure if he's feeling bad about having just cheated again or what's going on in his head, but yeah.
No, he remembered that he had a family in that moment. He's like, aw, it's so sweet to have a family.
Yeah, it must be nice. Meanwhile, real quick, Betty's entire storyline has to do with riding Horsey. She likes to ride Horsey.
I don't like this subplot.
Me neither.
No. The minute in episode one of this season, I just saw her in that costume.
Yeah, like horse girl costume.
Fuck, horse girl costume. There's going to be just scenes at a horse riding place.
Yeah,
and I was just like, this is going to be just wasps.
Yeah,
wasp nest of boredom.
And like, why do I need to know about this blue blooded dork? That wants to fuck her at the horse place. I feel like they ran out of things for Betty to do after season one, and I feel like this is sort of an extension of that.
Maybe.
Like, oh no, her hands don't work again.
Right, right. I do think there is, it builds up her character, gives her more dimension because you kind of see the difference between like someone like her and someone like Don. Whereas like Don, if someone were to go after Don as hard as Arthur goes after Betty, Don would cave immediately. And I think
it's true.
It shows that what Betty wants is to get someone to the point where they would go after her like that, but never like follow through. Because
and the etiquette that she's insisting on, her boundary is when he starts telling her too much personal information about when he met. In the minute there's any hint of marital or engagement discord, she says, I'm married and I can tell you that your wife would not be happy
with you divulging,
with you sharing this with a stranger. So her decorum.
Yeah.
And it also shows, as will be, I think, probably intensifying over the next few seasons, she's giving off pheromones that are more and more attractive to men who are looking for a woman who's craving something.
Yeah.
And she is authentically waspy in a way that Don is not.
Right.
Don is,
that's right.
Don is an imposter, an imp wasp. But he does not have the natural
Bartwistva.
She does not comedian. She does not have the natural, he does not have like the natural repressed.
I'm the pun guy on our podcast.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
It's a real relief to sit here and not have to participate.
Yeah, he doesn't have the natural ability to be repressed in that way.
Right.
Like
he can't
maintain that level of denial. Whereas she's like, nope, I've been doing this. I know how to do this. Mm-hmm. It comes naturally to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a hungry, hungry boy.
Yeah.
Underneath the suave debonair.
Mm-hmm. I just had a hippopotamus.
Hey, call back. Yeah, so Betty, is left alone with Arthur, and he like goes after her.
That's
heart.
The joke that Jimmy left out of his roast of this moment. Yeah.
he would have done a Zoodles joke if he had been a Canadian Jew. Just in that scene where Arthur's trying to fuck her, Arthur is doing this thing where he's just nagging her the whole time. I just have a little clip of that.
You're so profoundly sad.
No, it's just my people are Nordic.
I love that.
That's such a good line. I had that written down.
Like, I don't.
When people say to me, "You're so profoundly genocidal," I say, "No, it's just my people are Jewish."
Yeah. Oh, this podcast does not. What is the word? Fuck.
Support?
Support? I don't know. Condone anti-Semitism?
Promote, condone?
Whatever.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
It's fine.
But it is a crossover episode with our
Our anti-Semitic podcast. Yeah, save that for our anti-Semitic podcast. I will. No, I'm just kidding. So that is kind of Betty's storyline, sans Don, and we'll get into more what happens with her and Don later as their storylines converge with this dinner over at Lou Tess. But first, we should talk about Harry Crane. His story is essentially just he finds out how much money his coworker makes, and it sends him in a spiral, which I don't know if you have ever had that experience, but it is very real. Yeah, I remember working at one place and finding out that someone like who was like technically supposed to be like I was managing was making like, I don't know, 15% more money than I was making. And I was just like, and we're talking, you know, 5-digit incomes here. You know, we're not talking real money, but it was like he was making 50 and I was making 40. And it was like, I just was like, this is some fucking bullshit. I know my worth. I know my worth. And needless to say, I
got to the place where I didn't even ask anymore because I knew that it would make me unspeakably angry and unable
sharpen to, a pencil, super mad.
Yes, super fruitily. That's what I do. I just like, I'm always doing that. I knew I didn't want to know because it would make me angry. And I feel like there was still some semblance at this stage that the people that made the product, maybe this is like the beginning of the people that sell the product make more than the people who make the product. And now it's just understood that if you are closer to the money stream, that you get to siphon off a bigger portion of it, no matter like what the job is.
Yeah. I mean,
Ken works in accounts. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he takes care of clients and wines and dines them. Yeah. What do the accounts guys do?
I think that's what they do.
Thing is, I don't understand what Harry Crane does, but I assume he is closer to the product than making the product than Ken Cosgrove is. But
yeah,
Ken Cosgrove is closer to the money stream, ergo, like he knows
how big
that stream is and can divert more of it.
From what I can tell, accounts guy's main job is schmoozing as opposed to any kind of like coordination around, you know, copy or art or anything. I think they only touch that in so much as they get a directive from their client that says, hey, could you make sure that, you know, there's a hot girl in the poster or whatever. I think the people who get those jobs are like well-connected guys. Like, you know, Pete only has this job because his fucking father-in-law is like head of Clarisel or some shit.
Yeah, and Cosgroves and Campbells get those jobs.
Yes. So I think Kenny is in that same boat. I mean, just to look at him, you'd be like, oh, he also goes to horse clubs. He also love horse.
He wouldn't have to go to horse clubs because he already knows how to ride. He knows what it's like to tap a maple tree on a cool Vermont morning or whatever.
Oh, beautiful. And so, you know, Harry's feeling bad.
He looks at a maple tree and says, I'd tap that. I'm sure you made that joke already.
No, we haven't, but you know what? I think we should have. It just shames us that we haven't done it. So he is feeling bad. He calls his wife. His wife yells at him for just bitching. And then, you know, he feels like, you know, he's not appreciated. So he calls his friend who works at, I believe, at CBS.
Not before he goes to see Salvatore to see if he can...
Oh, yeah. Help him.
Salvatore can make him a bespoke envelope.
Yes. Yes. Because he opens...
Very funny scene.
He opens Kenny's check not accidentally. He gets Kenny's check accidentally.
He rips it accidentally.
Yes. He opens it and then he tries to like replace the envelopes and he fucks up his own envelope. And so he's like calling his wife, "How do I get an envelope?" And then he goes to he goes to Sal and says, "You know, can you make me an envelope with a window?"
No.
Why? Yeah. And so he explains to Sal how much Kenny is making, and Sal gets mad and he sharpens a pencil and he also says like, "Hey, you know, fucking, I don't know, ask for a raise. I don't know what to tell you."
Yeah. "You told your wife? What's the matter with you?"
Yeah. He mostly yells at him for telling his wife things, which yeah. I love. It's like, shout out to a man's man. Harry calls his friend Freddie at CBS, played by the great Nat Faxon. I only know that because he's just got one of those faces, you know?
Yes.
It's like a character actor
face. I think it's
face.
More the teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got them teeth. Also,
he's got some good lines in this scene.
Yeah. He's also an Oscar winner. Did you guys know really? That?
No.
Yeah. Didn't he? I forget what he did, but
it was like a short film or a short doc or something. I just remember seeing him a few years ago on stage holding an Oscar and being like, "That guy? Cool."
Right. Well, he writes more than you know of.
Right.
Like, he writes a ton of stuff, I think. Let's see, what was it? It was, The Descendants. He wrote The Descendants.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So he's telling Harry about this pilot that's having trouble getting a sponsor because it's filled with abortions. Harry shows it to the office. Peggy is enthralled. They're trying to pitch it to Beljolie Lipsticks, but they don't want it because it's too controversial.
And there's a great moment with the Beljolie guy and Sal yes. as they leave the room. Yes. Just a little callback to,
yeah.
I mean, that guy's face is so sad.
I know.
His friendly,
yeah.
you know, corn-fed, repressed homosexual
yeah.
politeness.
Closeted, corn-fed guy is...
Oh.
And yet he's somehow tragic. Less closeted than,
well, yeah.
than Sal.
Yeah. I mean... Sal, he can be less repressed outwardly. I mean, he's yes. very repressed sexually, but outwardly, he can be a little bit more, you know, have a few signifiers because nobody knows those signifiers. People
like, oh, he's just right. in the art department.
And okay. he's Italian. And they're just like, yeah. oh, he just loves his mother.
And he knows the lyrics to every musical ever. And,
yes. You know. Well, we live yeah. in New York. What's wrong with that?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So Harry ends up going into Roger's office and he finds out that he is not in trouble. He is, in fact, getting a promotion. So they make him the head of the TV department and he goes from making $200 a week to $225 a week.
How do you guys feel about the character of Roger Sterling?
Oh, well, I love him. I'm yeah. absolutely, I mean, I do think he's the actual he gets star all the of best. The show.
Yeah, he gets all the best lines.
I get tired of his lines sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, does everyone have to be a zinger? I'm like, this guy's actually not in the show. He's just floating. He's like superimposed onto it to be suave and
yeah.
slattery, well, which slattery should be a
verb.
A verb.
I agree with that, but also there's times when like there'll be, you know, four or five Don, Peggy, Pete head scratchers where you're not sure what the motive, like what the inspiration for that line or the motivation behind it was.
Right.
And there's only so much like ambiguity you can take. And then Slattery rolls in and he's just like, ha, cha, 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 cha. And you're like, all right, that's wordplay.
Yeah. He's having a fun time. I like him because he, I feel like his role on the show narratively is kind of like his role in The Office, where it's like he doesn't really need to be there. He doesn't right. really do anything. But
he has nothing.
He likes to offer some
color.
Well,
that's like his spot in the credits. I don't remember what it is for the second season, but like in the first season, it was like
special guest appearance.
Yeah, special guest appearance. And it's like, okay, but he's in every episode. So
they just liked him. They're like, this guy rules.
He especially offers some color in season 3 in the episode My Old Kentucky Home. But you guys will get to that in good time.
I'm very excited for the famous blackface scene. Yeah. So good for Harry. They're celebrating. Harry goes home to his wife, who is knitting booties. And Harry says to her, "What are you, expecting a Chinese baby?" And that means it is time for our segment called What?
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 Okay.
There's a Kids in the Hall skit on exactly the same premise, you know?
Oh, yeah?
It's a very short, cold open sketch. What? What?
What?
That's the only line in it.
What's that joke?
I don't get the joke.
I don't know. I don't
know. Nobody knows.
But I'm really glad you have a segment called What for Mad Men jokes that are just...
Well, there's always at least one in episode where I'm just like, yeah, this is some 60s thing. Like, it's gotta be, because I don't even have a clue as to what could possibly be Chinese about any of that.
Yeah. Knitting? Is it the booties?
Is it that the booties were yellow?
Is it because like the small booty? Is it like a foot binding?
Yeah,
joke.
I don't know. I want to Google it. But I don't even know how to Google it.
I tried to Google versions of Chinese baby ? Mad Men the Benefactor, and I got nothing.
You got nothing. Yeah. Well,
you got adoption agency website.
Yeah. Well, it'll remain a mystery, but if you know the answer, write us, frogcast@gmail.com. Okay. Finally,
at the end of that scene, of course, there's a great line that I didn't catch the first time where he tells her, she's like, "So you sold a new sponsor to, or you sold a new commercial to your sponsor?" He's like, "No, they rejected it, but they appreciated my initiative." And she says, "Oh, what was the show about?" He says,
You wouldn't like it.
It was just some show. You wouldn't like it. I didn't catch that. But as he puts his head on her pregnant belly.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell her about the abortion.
Yeah.
Show.
I don't want to give her any ideas.
I also like the humor of it after he spent the entire board meeting being like, "You know who's going to love this?
The women.
Broads.
Yeah.
This is going to be like catnip for the broads. They will not be able to stay away from it."
Yeah, I think Peggy has one line in this entire episode, and she says, "There's no doubt in my mind."
Yeah, yeah.
When asked, "Will the women watch this?"
Yeah, it's true. Peggy doesn't say much in that scene, but she's watching it enthralled as someone who is probably like, "Yeah, had I known I was pregnant, like,
wait, you can do that?
I would have loved to have just had an abortion."
I just assumed I was in a really bad fat suit
for
5 episodes.
Yeah. So, back to Don. Don calls Bobby Barrett, invites Bobby and Jimmy to dinner with her and Betty. They're going to go to Lutece, and he's basically arranging a public, or I guess private, apology
ceremony.
You know,
they
should
have invited?
Who?
It was Dickie Barrett of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones.
Oh, man. You know, or Sid Barrett of Pink Floyd, and should have told him, "Hey, don't do acid so much. You got any more? Any more Barrett interruptions?"
Should have invited Dave Barrett, the former leader of the British Columbia New Democrats.
There we go. It's for all our BC heads out there.
While you eat your zoodles.
When you're negotiating, there's, you know, you got to use the Barrett and the stick. And Don, he tries to use both. Because he sticks. Never mind.
I would say you've got a grin and Barrett, but the show
they
itself
already
makes
did
that
it.
Joke several episodes
They already
later.
Did it. Also, you find out that, like, she goes, "If it was up to me, the show would be called Grin and Brownstein," or I forget what his actual Jewish last name was.
Yeah.
But yeah. I thought that was very funny. So
the call itself, when he tells Bobby there's going to be a dinner, is laden with innuendo.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's that kind of call.
Yeah.
What do you want? I'm at home with my wife and my kids. I like to be bad and go home and be good.
Yeah. Any conversation they have with each other, even when they're talking business, you're like, "Are we fucking?" Like, that's what it feels like.
I didn't know this was going to be that kind of phone call. And you're like, I'm lost on the entendre train here, but sure.
Yeah.
This must be the most hate fucky affair he has in the whole.
Yeah, like, I wonder.
It's very hostile.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like it's like they don't like each other. And he's almost like, fucking her anti-Semitically. I'm just going to go out and say it.
Which is different than how he was with Maggie Siff.
Yeah. I think, you know, he was in love with her despite her being a Jew.
That's right.
So
is Bobby Barrett Jewish? Are we to?
I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. Just fun. I assume not, but.
Are there anti-Semites who only hate converted Jews or Jews by marriage?
Oh, I think I'm one.
Like specialized, like niche anti-Semites?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, isn't that like in the, I feel like a lot of Israelis probably don't like those things. That's my guess.
A lot of settlers are those things, actually.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I remember when I went to a settlement, the woman who gave us a talk was clearly a blonde WASP from California who had converted.
Oh, gotta love it. So at the dinner, Jimmy shows up and immediately starts hitting on Betty. Is like,
as you know, the best way to apologize to a woman for making her feel
ugly,
fat and ugly, is to ignore her completely in favor of a much more attractive woman at the dinner.
Yeah,
table.
It's a good start. But he doesn't completely ignore her. He shakes her hand, says, "Look at you, all dolled up," which is like fucking
little, and he calls her the little lady.
Yeah, the little lady. He can't stop. And then he's talking, you know, I think he's talking to Don, and at one point he goes, "I loved you in Gentleman's Agreement," which I don't see how that applies. Is he saying he looks like Gregory Peck?
Is Gentleman's Agreement a kind of Indecent Proposal premise?
No, Gentleman's Agreement is about a journalist who goes undercover pretending to be a Jew and to see if he can stay at a hotel. And he finds out that, you know, as soon as they find out that he's a Jew, which he's not, but, you know, he spreads the rumor that he is, they don't let him in the hotel. And then,
why didn't they call it Gentileman's Agreement?
They should have. Hey. Gentileman's Agreement would have been much better. But yeah, it's an interesting
Come on,
movie
Vince,
about
pick up the pun slack here, man.
I know. Sorry, I was busy.
It's a home game for you.
Yeah. I was busy with the inflation calculator.
Okay. the most important piece of content in the show. how much money is that worth now? How many more monies?
Where's the bumper for this segment?
We don't have one. I will make one.
How much do you think $300 is in today's money?
Oh,
and this is a week or a month that they're making?
A week.
$300 a week is now $3,000 a week.
Yep, basically.
Really?
$3,180. And if he's getting paid for all 52 weeks, I don't know if that's how you would assume that. I don't know. We don't get paid by the week anymore. But assuming 52 weeks, that is $165,000 a year.
Yeah. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to make more money.
and Harry's making 200, that's right?
Yes.
Until he gets the 12.5% raise?
Yeah.
Yep.
So he's making 4,000 a week.
He's making 2,120 a week, okay. Or at his original salary.
$8,000
and
a
that
month.
Works out to $110,240 a year.
Hey, so nothing to sneeze at.
Nothing to see.
Switch your bitching.
Anyways, Gentleman's Agreement is an interesting movie about American anti-Semitism.
I think Jimmy's just complimenting Don on his movie star looks too.
I think so too. So things are going a lot slower with the apology than Don would like. So he follows Bobby Barrett to the bathroom, sexually assaults her, powerfully asserts his manhood by saying, "You better get him to apologize or I will destroy him."
See, my question there, I guess, the basic question is like, was he trying to make her scared or horny?
I think both. I think both.
Yeah.
I think he sees how much she is the alpha with Jimmy.
Yes. Mm.
And I think he senses accurately, it turns out, that, you know, a woman who is so dominant in public and with her own husband is secretly longing to be dommed by Dom Draper.
Oh, Dom Draper. Good name.
said that.
Yes. No, I think you're right.
Draper, I hardly even know her.
Hey, cha-cha-cha. So.
Draper.
All right. Whoa. Statutory. Dumb. Statutory Draper.
Statutory Drape. That's what he does. He yeah. commits statutory drape.
That's why they call him Dom Draper.
Oh, man. So, they all go back to the table. Bobby elbows Jimmy and is like, it's time for your apology. That's the reason we're here at Vertes, or Lutes.
Lutes.
Which very much just like pulls the string hanging out of his back.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, yeah. I say the
there's
word
a
now.
Snake in my boot.
And it's actually quite a touching apology.
Yeah.
The line about, you know, there's the guy under the lights and then there's me. And
yeah.
He's made me
mean
a lot of money, but he hasn't made me very nice.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, turns out pretty much exactly how
Roger described them.
Roger described it, which is like, you know, a guy like that, you figure he's got to know how to, got to know his way around a genuine apology. Otherwise he'd be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good line.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
a really sharp line from Roger.
And here is that apology.
Honestly, I'd rather eat your chips than anything in this dump. They have snails here, you know.
That ain't it.
That's nice to hear.
It's a shilling. Edith. I was out of line the other day. I shouldn't have said it to you, and not just because you're married to him. I shouldn't have said it to anybody. Not in that environment. Sweetheart, look at me. You too, Hunt. Can I call you Hunt? There's the guy under the lights, and there's me. He's made me rich, but he hasn't made me very nice. Hope we can put it behind us.
I know that's what you do. I guess I just don't have the stomach for it.
And then he bites his fist which I missed the first time.
It's so funny. He's just like,
I was so busy laughing before that, like I almost missed the fist.
Oh, it's so funny. The way he stops himself from doing a joke about her not having the stomach for something. Jesus. It'd be the first thing you didn't have the stomach for.
What else you got? Come on, you got more. What can you do with that?
I don't have the stomach for it. It's like, you got the stomach for anything. You got, I don't know. You do it. I'm sick.
No, you do one. You. You're the roast comic.
I'm
you
not
and Francesca's
a roast
relationship is exactly like Jimmy and Bobby, I've always imagined.
Yeah. It was like, I don't have the stomach. Oh, well, you definitely have the tits for it. How about that?
Yeah.
You don't have the stomach for it. Well, have you looked in the mirror? Fat soul. You fat.
I'm surprised. I'm genuinely surprised to hear you assert that you do not have the stomach for it, because to my eyes, your stomach is rather large.
Yeah.
That's the Norm MacDonald version of that one.
You don't have the stomach for it. Look at you. You're like a cow. You have 9 stomachs for it. Oh, there's the joke. The joke is, once you don't have the stomach for it, well, try one of your other 9 stomachs.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yep. You got there.
All right. Well, so it works out. He doesn't say that joke. That would have crushed.
I'll tip Francesca for you finally nailing that one.
Fuck you. they all, there's a car ride back. Betty starts crying because she's so happy. She gets to be a part of Don's life. Really likes teaming up with him too.
I got the feeling that she wasn't actually that happy when she was crying in that scene.
I disagree. I thought she was genuinely happy to be there. I don't know, Daniel, what do you think?
I think her emotions are not that acquainted with each other.
Mm-hmm. True.
And
true, and
I think that there's
that was deep as shit. That is so true. Damn.
I think she thought she was happy, but she was actually sad.
Yeah.
I think when a person's been deprived of something so long,
yeah,
the relief that comes with it comes with the grief of everything they haven't felt, of being deprived of it.
Yeah.
And feeling shut out of his life for so long and knowing that this may be a one-off, and maybe also, you know, on a more unconscious level, like being a part of his life means just being a show wife and having a rakish Jewish comedian, you know,
slobber all over you.
No, he gives her what she wants, which is to be regaled for her physical attractiveness for most of a dinner.
She wants to feel, yeah. I think she wants to feel useful.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's a low ceiling. It's a low bar. So those tears could have, I think consciously she was happy.
Right.
She wants to be useful, and her only vocabulary for that is it looks based.
Looks and charm and social graces.
Yes. Yeah.
She's very well bred and she knows how to comport herself. And, you know, the etiquette again, I mean, and the etiquette at the stables with a young whippersnapper who's out of pocket talking to her in ways that are inappropriate is different than, you know, her role with Don there is to make Don look good and to compliment whatever he's up to, even though he didn't tell her in advance that there was going to probably be an apology.
Yeah.
So that would be my read.
I think that is,
that sounds accurate.
That is the perfect read. I think you are 100% right.
I was just grateful this wasn't one of the 16,000 episodes that ends with like darkness, nighttime in the Draper house with like zooming in or out on Don's face while he's on the toilet or on the edge of the bed or in the hallway or going in to kiss his kids. I've seen it so many times. They do that too much at the end of episodes.
Yeah.
And this one is a night ride home.
Yeah. I liked it. Yeah. I completely agree. In fact, there's a lot of over-focusing on like, what does Don's face mean? And after a while, you're like, who care? Like at some point we're going to look like they'll just do
the same face all the time anyway, which is.
Yeah.
Scowling, you know?
I would love to, like, you do an x-ray, you just see his thought bubble, and it's just close-up dick in pussy. Dick in pussy.
Yeah, like Homer with the...
Yeah.
with the sippy guy.
Yeah. So, that's the episode. Do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about? Daniel?
No, I think we covered it all.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And probably the scene with Don and Lois would be my favorite.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a marvelous comic.
Yeah.
Lovable performance by that actress. We should name her. We've named some other bit players. She's...
Yeah, we Lois should name her. Especially since I don't know how much she shows up after this. Lois from Mad Men. This actress's name... The character's name is Lois Sadler, and she's played by Krista Flanagan. Shout out to Krista. Still alive.
Great work.
Still alive. Yeah. Thank you, Google.
Sure.
I always Google if someone's still alive. Vince, favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about?
One thing we didn't talk about, I mean, my favorite moments were Jimmy biting the finger and my people are Nordic. Those are my two big laugh lines, yeah. I think, in the episode. I'm always fascinated with Betty's WASP manners and like her, you know, her rigid rules of comportment that I don't always understand. And then one moment in this episode where that stood out to me is their daughter is talking about Betty at the table, and she said I could have blah blah blah, and Betty goes, "She, like, children, you're not allowed to use pronouns with me."
Or,
you're only allowed.
Boy, oh boy, has that changed? Am I right? Yeah,
too many pronouns. Everybody doing.
I mean, if you transport her to 2025, she's still mad about pronouns.
Yeah,
this in a different way.
They're always doing a pronoun.
No, but yeah, the idea that you're not allowed to refer to your mother as she.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, wow. I guess I could, if I squint really hard, I guess I can see what
that's
about.
Like third person pronoun. I mean, I think you're supposed to be like, mother said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the good lady has told me that I wasn't allowed to go to bed before 10 p.m.
Just one thing we didn't talk about. I agree with you on those are some of my favorite jokes in the show. But there's one like random fat joke that happens when she's at the horse stable and her friend who is also looking at Arthur. Right.
She grows out of it.
Yeah, she fucking talks about her daughter and just like fat shames her daughter real quick. I have some audio of
honestly
that. Oops, fuck. I have that joke here, fat joke.
Becky has a dance recital. It's so horrible to put girls that fat in a leotard.
Stop.
Yeah.
She'll outgrow it.
She did.
Got her ass.
Got her ass double. And there was a reason that joke was so funny to Matt Lieb. And Matt, play the Cosgrove
drum. Well, yeah, of course it was because...
No, my mother's heavy set.
Fuck you. Yeah. I can't believe I did that to myself. So That is the episode. If I had to give this episode.
You did
episode,
it to yourself on the 30th anniversary of the Bends by Radiohead.
I did it to myself. That song, by the way, is about the Palestinians. you know, they never missing an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Right. He wrote that about Arafat.
Can't kick the Jews out.
Yeah. They've been hanging around.
Throwing rocks for days.
One day I'll get ticked. All right. So if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, guys, we're in for a surprise. I'd give it a B plus. Vince, what would you give this? Or Vince, what would you give this episode?
Such a memorable episode. A lot of laugh lines. I understood almost everything. great new character introduced. I mean, one of the best Mad Men episodes, I think, that there is. And therefore, I'm calculating it using my inflation calculator.
Yeah, take long.
Comes out to a solid B plus.
B plus. What a surprise. Yeah. Daniel Mate, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
You know, you guys, I couldn't disagree more. You know, I thought that this show was this episode was sort of thematically inert.
Sure.
Some uninspired performances.
Yes.
You know, no scenes that really stand out. Not very plausible or relatable.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a strong to medium B plus.
Wow. Well, that's a shocker. B pluses all around for this episode of Mad Men, but you know what?
Just a smorgasbord of different opinions.
Yeah, I mean, so hey,
it's crazy.
You know, two Jews, one Italian. I don't know. it's a solid A plus episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Daniel,
what's really funny? Sorry.
Yes.
Just this minute, I had the YouTube page for our Bad Hasbara episode premiere drop open all day for some reason.
Yeah.
And the countdown music just started playing in my earphones.
You're like, oh fuck.
Time to go listen to my other show.
Yeah, time to go in the comments section. See how many of Ethan Klein's people are mad. Daniel Mate, thank you so much for coming on Mad Yourself a Man.
Mad Has Bar Man.
Where can people find you?
Instagram, Twitter, Daniel B. Mate. That's MATE.
Mm-hmm.
I have a website you might want to check out called walkwithdaniel.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also danielmate.com for my songwriting, musical theater stuff.
Check out all of that stuff. We will have links in the bio. Once again, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, bros.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/broadcast. $8 tier gets you a shout out, a prep school name. You know it. You love it. It's worth it. Vince.
What do you got?
We have four names. The first one is Guy Franks.
Oh, Guy Franks. This Guy Franks.
This Guy Franks.
What is this, V for Vendetta? We call it, it's like H for hot dogs over here.
Yeah.
We call this guy Glizzy.
Glizzy,
that's what
okay.
The kids call hot dogs nowadays.
Do they?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It's like, oh man, it's so disconnected. I think like Glizzy was slang for like a Glock at somewhere, and then like because the Glock sort of.
Looks like a hot dog
somehow. I think that's the origin. Doesn't make a ton of sense for me, but that's what I read.
I feel like it's like our version of Cockney, but no one is meant to decipher it. Glizzy. Three more names. Rex Bosworth, $10 patron. Rex Bosworth.
Rex Bosworth. Woo. Can we go with the Boz? Is that too corny?
I think that's good. The Boz is good.
Bozo. Oh, no. We'll go Australian. Hey, oi, Bozo. Fish is a tinny. You can't?
I can't. It's Bozo here. Yeah. Trying to go down under.
I don't know, man. I don't know what they say over there.
Yeah. Crikey. I've been killed by a stingray.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's
right. Oh, no, my chest. My chest is split wide open, boy.
They put
boy.
Venom in my chest, and now I'm dead. Oh, I've got a son. Of course, a live son.
It's not a stinger.
That's not a life. This is a life. Then he gets stabbed. All right. Damn, two more. Alicia G.
Oh, this, we call her the regulator.
Oh, like Warren G.
Yeah, you got
regulators. Just hit the east side of Alicia G. Okay, one more. Miguel Dogwater.
We call this guy Limp Bizkit, because that's what his name sounds like, one of their albums.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like someone who played backup bass for Limp Bizkit. it's like the touring bassist for for Kid Rock.
They were like too lazy to give him a good nickname. Like,
he's Dogwater.
Miguel Dogwater.
Yeah, he does the part where he goes a ball with the ball to bang a bang. And that is your shout-outs for this week. Patreon.com/Rockcast. Get those names in. Get those patron monies in and do it. Frockcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Here's my story. It's sad but true. Me and my wife hired a Jew. And when he saw her, he began to clown. Her shadow weighs 42 pounds. Hey, hey, bad wife, bad wife. I got a really bad wife. Yeah, bad wife. Oh, bad wife. A really, really bad wife. Keep away from my wife. Said, those Jewish lips with a smile on their face, they hide the meanness of their cursed race. It's all right there in the Talmud. So keep away from the funny mean Jews who said, hey, hey, fat wife, hey, fat wife. I got a real fat wife. This fucking Jewish guy, here's some jokes that Jimmy said about my fat wife. It takes two trains to get to her good side. She turns into a warehouse during a full moon. But stay away from the funny mean Jews. Said, hey, keep away from them Jews. Jews, man, them Jews are real mean. Gotta keep away from Jews. Fade out. Fine.
Oh, you sniffling there? What are you?
I'm trying to lube my throat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you wish you didn't know.
I can help you do that.
You son of a bitch. he means throat fucking me, Daniel.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.